you don't need to have, a board of directors to question your aesthetic decisions. And so you can take more risks that way, I guess. And that definitely is what attracted me to curating online, was it can be more of a, like, pirate ship's not really the right thing, because that sounds too out of control, but more like a dinner party. That's the analogy that I always feel comfortable with. You know, you don't have to ask people permission to invite certain people to dinner. You just invite them if you want them to come over. And did we get disconnected?
Yes, you trailed off. I was curious.
Yeah, I forgot what the question was. Do you want to reel me in?
Yeah. No, that's good. And the fact that I missed like 30 seconds, you were having a whole conversation with yourself.
I know. It happens all the time.
It does happen. No, the question is, why curate online? But you know, and that's part of the bigger picture of definitions and what's a curator. And you've shaken it up in 5 years. You've definitely shaken it up, because what you've done from the beginning is this collaborative curation kind of thing. So
right. I think that probably some would and some have questioned what I do as being a curator at all, according to kind of contemporary art discourses around curating, which I could give a hoot about, actually. What I do is fairly erratic and haphazard, but I like it that way. And so I think about curating as more of from the monastic origins of it, which is just simply who takes care of a space.
Maple syrup.
I wasn't interested in controlling any kind of conversation through Trick House. And so I invite somebody to do something. I invite them to do it. I don't pick the work that they're going to show. And that's a big philosophical difference. And so then it also ensures that things stay really unhinged. That's even more intentional than what my curating style, if I have one, would be, which is more like inviting people again over for dinner and, you know, they'll bring something. That's all I know.
Someone might say, how do you handle that randomness, or how do you handle that lack of control?
When I first started, the visual navigational structure for Trick House and very strict hallways with doors, and each door led into a single room, you know, based on the brothel, Trick House being the nickname, slang for a brothel. And so that simplicity felt like the way to unify any material that came in.
Oh, some honey and some vanilla. Maybe I'll add some rice syrup.
If I know that you're a sound person and I say, make something for Trick House, I won't even say make a sound for Trick House, because I don't know, maybe that's not what you feel like doing. You make sounds all the time. Maybe you want to draw something on a bar napkin and scan it and send it over. I'd be perfectly happy with that. And so, because I don't know any aspect of the content that's going to be coming in, my only real job is being able to contain it and present it in a way that feels easy on a visitor. And that's one of the things that I think is strange about the internet as a venue for something like this, because it, because Strickhouse basically avoids one of the great advantages of the internet, which is being able to link things all over the place. What I was trying to do is create this kind of closed environment. It's not an intersection to anywhere.
Baking powder. I don't remember that.
What do you do when you get work that somebody brings in, work that you don't connect to?
Well, I guess I don't really have much option but to format it and publish it. Part of what is interesting about it, if you go through any issue of Strickhouse, you're going to find certain things that are like, what is that? Some of it is almost unbearable. And some of it is failed experiments, you know, which I encourage. And so I kind of had from the beginning a rule for myself that unless there was something, you know, illegal or racist or homophobic or something really offensive in the work, I would just publish it, you know, whether I liked it or thought it resonated with the other work or whatever. Because there's also a thing about relationship between things, just based on their proximity, things are going to have some kind of either harmonic or dissonant relationship, but that there's no idea beforehand of what that should look like is part of the fun for me.
It's almost, you know, like in most curating, you walk into a museum and the painting sitting next to the other painting has to talk to the other side of the room painting. And in Strickhouse, it's more like the ethos of the curator that you invited has to somehow work with the ethos of another curator that you've invited. And the work is almost, in some ways, a step behind the actual curating that goes on. It's like a curation of curating.
Interesting. So would you say that the greatest strength would be in the curating philosophy that's exchanged between the people or the work itself or some relation between those things?
I think it's a relationship of the curator to you and back to the curator again, and then the result comes out in what work is invited in and how you present it. But I ultimately think that it's a relationship of you, your networking with other people.
Uh-huh. If we were to keep Strickhouse up where it is, how it is, you know, we could freeze it now, not put any more posts on there, and just keep it as this archive of, you know, however many contributions, hundreds, you know, there's a lot of stuff on there. There's no information that needs to be conveyed through Strickhouse. You don't, like, if you're looking for information, you're not going to go to Strickhouse for it. And if you're looking to, like, make a point about something, it's not, or have a conversation with somebody or impress somebody, like, it's not for those things. And so it takes some of the pressure off, you know. And I think there's something to it being, like, when I think of who it's for, it is kind of for people down the road. Like, it may not be, you know, these are the things that are published in Strickhouse are, I think, good examples of spontaneous creative eruptions during a very specific period of time.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about the five people that I interviewed, and they really are pushing boundaries of the medium that they work in. So somebody works in film, but it's very linguistic, it's very language oriented. Another person works in film and it's very sound oriented. Another person works in a visual two-dimensional painting, but it's literary and dream oriented. It's ironic in some ways that I selected those, but I think they represent Trick House in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the lack of direction is one of Trick House's strengths. You know, that it's not trying to promote work that is too, I don't want to say competent, but if you say, I know that you're really good at this, and it's important for my publication to show you doing what you're best at, then that is a lot of constraint and can make the work precious. Too precious. Whereas if you say, you know, let the edges be open, well, there's a vulnerability, and that exchange is way more interesting to me than having somebody do what they've already been prized for doing.
Okay, let's see. Some oil. How much? Quarter cup.
Quarter cup.
I didn't ever want Trick House to be a place where people would go get publishing credits or feel like something to add to their bio, you know, but a place where they could go and do something that they wouldn't be able to do somewhere else. So presumably if someone is invited to Trick House, if I've invited them or if one of the other curators of Trick House have invited them, it's because they are trustworthy in some way that, you know, some vague way. We trust you to do something of interest, basically. Which I think feels good to people.
Right.
You know.
Right. By the mere fact that they're putting work in a brothel.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's funny. Now that visual isn't there anymore, you know. And so I think that's interesting, too. I don't know. I don't know what happened to that other than it was too much work, you know, to do full issues four times a year. Because it wound up being like 10 different curators and however many contributors each of them had. You know, that's like, you know, holding a banquet every week.
Does that mean you have to change the name?
Right, yeah. No, I thought about, I mean, so many times I think about, should I fold it? Should I turn it into a radio show? Should I turn it into a cookbook? I don't know. Like, what is the next iteration of it? What's the next body, this specter? I don't think about, like, in seances where, like, a specter will all of a sudden inhabit a body and the body will do a bunch of awkward things, and then the specter will exit out of its mouth or ear or something. And I kind of am waiting for Trick House to do that. Like, but it's not really surprising in that way that it stopped being brothel-based full issues and started to be much more contained. There might only be one or two people showing at any time. And that could be, you know, for 3 months, for 6 months, there are two people that are published, which is absurd, you know, given the amount of information that flows online.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to stop. unless there's, you know, I often ask people, I don't tell them I'm going to ask them this, but I ask them, what's a question that you would ask yourself?
Oh, boy. What's a question I would ask myself? Maybe, how do you know when to stop? Am I supposed to also answer?
Not necessarily. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Because, I mean, that's been an ongoing question about Trick House for a long time. And because it is a huge effort, a lot of effort goes into it, you know. But I guess when it stopped being enjoyable. Yeah. Well, I hope there's enough for you to go on there.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's perfect.